Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. It's actually Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I'll remember the name change someday. My name is Sam. Joining me today is Becky. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
And Becca, how are you?
Being a clone of Becky.
No, you guys sound real different. Unlike me and Ron John, apparently. We're still getting noise about that. I don't know what to do about that. I might get like one of those voice boxes and I'll sound like a go-out-old or something like that.
Excellent. I like that.
Yeah. Hello, welcome to Ask an Atheist. So last week we had Horace Gilgamesh on, and he actually contributed to Peggy's challenge and said, "Thanks for taking the time to chat, Sam and Becky. It was a real pleasure meeting you both, and I look forward to many good things coming out of Tacoma. Thank you very much, Horace, for meeting Peggy's challenge, the challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist from Peggy from Kent to help us keep the lights on. You can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, take you right to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production, not like Twinkies or anything."
I think, you know, the coming out of Tacoma, the really good things coming out of Tacoma is contrasted to the mail that Horace Gilgamesh
from
Tacoma.
And he actually said something about how I ended the interview last week. And he said it sounded a little bit too much like vicarious atonement. And that's something that was completely not in my head. And that would be a little bit weird. It's not that. It's just this is the place I picked. And here it is, people in it doing something crappy like they do to someone who's doing cool stuff.
It's just very strange to think of someone in Tacoma saying, "Hey, if you publish things that may challenge religion or may not put religion in the greatest light, you are worthy of receiving death threats."
Take a look at local politics in Tacoma if you're interested. It's kind of wacky.
It's hit and miss.
Well, the thing is, Tacoma's pretty good.
Pierce County gets a little
Pierce
funny.
County's a little weird. Moving on, though. Two secular groups at the University of Florida wrote a letter asking for the removal of a biblical passage inscribed on a campus building. Gator Freethought and Humanists on Campus co-signed the letter to University President Kent Fuchs. The letter expresses support for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, who wrote to the university asking for the inscription to be changed or removed. The inscription, a verse from the Book of Micah, is on the facade of a newly constructed heaven or hall.
Okay, two things.
Heavener's a last name.
Yeah, Heaven. Okay, yes. That's thing one.
Heavener.
But here's, is there a heavenist? Most heaveny?
Heavenopodies?
I don't know. But here's the thing. In Florida, there is a university that has not just one free thought campus group, but two. You have Gator Free Thought, so I'm assuming Gators is their mascot.
Could it be one group, Gator Free Thought and Humanists on Campus?
Two secular groups at the University of Florida.
No, could that be one group?
Given that these are two secular groups sending their letters.
You are confirming that they are two groups. This is what I am asking.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Is this People's Front of Judea and Judean People's Front?
It may be, but hey, if we have a state campus in Florida, of all places, we know that there's all sorts of things going on.
That's one of the
vertices of the obtuse triangle, Florida, having funny things happen there. There's enough activism in Florida to have two different groups.
Well, not only that, but signed on this letter were both the president and president-elect. So both of these groups are large enough to have elections and pass the torch to another person. Honestly, our group in Oklahoma, our group, like I'm still there.
No.
They're mine. I love you guys.
I still consider Seattle Atheists my group, too. It's my home group, you know?
Yeah. But Oklahoma atheists sometimes don't have these contested elections, and they're large. And so for these groups to have contested elections and have these, each have their president, each have their president-elect, these are substantial groups.
Yeah. And, University of Florida folks, I wonder how it works to have two free thought groups on campus and what the interface is there. I mean, I could see the need for like 50 of them on one campus if the campus is big enough. Because I'm used to seeing one campus, one group. And I kind of wonder what it looks like when there is two. Do they fight? Do they play dodgeball? Do they go out for pizza?
I think probably a little bit of column A, B, and C.
Well, I would like to know.
I would like to know, too. So, yeah. Hey, Gator Freethinkers and Humanists on your campus.
There's not much to say about this. It's a public university, and they're putting quotes of the Book of Micah at a time when everybody is trying to promote religion as you know, there's, you got people out there, politicians out there saying God wrote the Constitution. And this is supposed to be a nation that has a separation of church and state. However, you know, I understand that religious, you know, religious quotes, they're inspiring. They make people feel moral because we all know that religion is moral, right? Religion is completely moral.
How do you mean, Sam?
For example, a Michigan Catholic school dismissed a student who was recovering from cancer treatments. St. Joseph Middle School sent a letter to a seventh grade girl who had battled leukemia for the past 2 years because she wasn't meeting her academic or attendance standards. Though the school made accommodations for her condition, the student's father claimed the accommodations were woefully inadequate. The school has announced that in a press release, that they have since decided to invite the young girl back to school and claim the coverage of the story in the media was greatly distorted.
Oh, this one just breaks my heart on a great number of levels. One, you're talking about the morality of religion, Sam, and what is more moral than supporting a child who is struggling against cancer
and has done nothing wrong.
Nothing at all. Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
She had cancer. Clearly she's demon possessed. Oh. No, I'm joking. Anyway.
I'm not sure exactly about that one, but here's the thing.
Sometimes I'm
not sure. I'm going to stand straight up against it.
Okay. Yeah. So
I know they're Catholics.
Not possessed.
No, okay. Clearly not.
Child is not possessed. She merely has leukemia. Here's the thing. I have some experience teaching young people in schools. Sometimes horrible things befall our children, our students, right? I've even had the experience of teaching at a private school with a child who did have leukemia.
Yeah.
There's two things that a school can do. They can say, we support you in your condition. We love you. You're part of our family. And we will work with you in whatever kinds of things you need. Perhaps this child was going from 7th to 8th grade and said, you know what, your academics, you haven't progressed in them so far. We want to provide you all the support you need. Perhaps repeating 8th grade, getting all of that content and those skills will better prepare you for high school. I could see that. That even seems supportive. But to say, you know what, you're not meeting your academic standards and you're down on attendance. How heartless does one have to be to dismiss a child from their community, from their place that they feel safe?
Well, and heartbreakingly, I watched an interview with this child, which
I couldn't bring myself to it. Tell us about it.
Oh, it was, her lip was quivering the entire time, and she kept talking about how the only place that she ever felt normal was whenever she was able to go to school.
Oh,
the only time that she felt as though she was a normal kid again was whenever she was with other children and associating with them, and they wanted to take this environment away from her.
Yeah.
It's just... the pain in her voice and the pain on her face was hard. I'm quivering thinking about it.
I believe it. So I love the last sentence of this, Catholics. Catholic management folks. Because this isn't clergy. This is people who run a school. Let you in a little trick that I do with myself when I'm thinking I'm going to be doing something controversial or weird or off the record or something just takes me off the rails. I look at the situation, I remove all of like the side stories, the covering, and I try to say what exactly my verb is in the worst way possible. I try to semantically weight it as bad as I can. And then I say it to myself and I go, am I okay being this person? So you have all this sideshow stuff. Oh, she wasn't meeting her academic standards. Oh, we have a high level of blah, 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 blah. You have a million reasons, but you take that all away. What you're doing is kicking a girl out of school because she has cancer. How is that distorted? That is what you did. You are admitting to that.
Well, also, I find it, you know, it's hard to realize that the only reason they even let her back at all was because of a public outcry. And they're just like, that public outcry was ridiculous, but I guess we'll let her back. Like, that's how it reads.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to say that the media coverage was distorted is further telling your constituents or those who are concerned with the welfare of this child.
So what if it was? Yeah. So what if it was distorted? What if they said, you know, you were doing something horrible to her. You were actually being abusive or something. But take that all away. You kicked a girl out of school because she had leukemia. How is that? What in what universe is that moral? Like, and these are the people who believe they have a direct line to God. That they've got somebody they work for who talks to God on a daily basis and is the font of morality.
Well, and another thing is they kicked her out because they said she wasn't meeting academic and, you know,
attendance standards.
Right. And then they further went on to say that they were allowing her to go get a better education that was more for her. How is it going to be a better education if she can't do the things that she's not doing there? It's going to be the exact same thing. She's going to have the same...
She's still going to have cancer.
She's going to need accommodations needed.
To meet her where she's at.
The exact same needs, and they're just not meeting them.
Becky, with your experience, is this something that you just administratively decide and say, nah, you need to go somewhere else for your better education, you're gone? Or is this the kind of thing, like, I'm sorry, I might be logical or something, there might be something wrong with my brain, but that seems like something that you would coordinate with parents.
Yes, and in a public school education, we have legal safeguards to protect children who are at risk, who are vulnerable because of illness, and to say, look, we meet you where you're at, we create an individualized education plan, we have legal accommodations that we need to make for this child to make sure that she is not not falling through the cracks. We have, if she's unable to attend school, we are legally obligated to provide home tutoring. If she is unable to be met with the resources of the district, the district is legally obligated to then send her to an educational environment or coordinate an educational environment where she is able to receive the kinds of things that she needs. A Catholic school is not held to such things. They don't have any kind of legal obligations to do so. So a Catholic school, or any private school for that matter, could say, no, she's not really, meeting our expectations for what we want for students. And why don't you go get your education somewhere else where you're legally protected, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're basically saying...
Unlike here.
And one of the things that this sort of reminds me of is the danger of states that have, for instance, school vouchers for religious schools. In for instance, Tennessee... Right. You can with a voucher law, you can use your public money to send your child to a school where they could say, you know what, because you have cancer, you're not attending enough. So we're going to kick you out. Is that really where we want our public money going to support religious schools where they can be doing this kind of thing?
This is actually an opinion you had that you approached me with before the show. It's like, this is a political. Is this something that I should say on the air? And I'm like, yeah.
Well, we have legal protections for children who attend public schools. You get free and compulsory education until age 17 and then free education until 21 so that you can adequately be served and educated. Well, there's no such protections in private schools and religious schools.
In the next segment of the show, we're going to be talking about reason. I mean, National Day of Reason, which is thinking, which is thought, which we require some data in order to do properly. And now you get that sort of information and you get those tools from education. So while it may seem weird and political, from an Ask an Atheist standpoint, I don't think access to information or data or education is really all that political. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into the break, and when we come back, we are going to talk to the American Humanist Association about the National Day of Reason.
Experience Mile High Humanism at the annual conference of the American Humanist Association, May 7th through 10th in Denver, Colorado. Network with chapter leaders, become a trained humanist celebrant, and hear from Lawrence Krauss, Marcy Hamilton, writers from The Onion, and more. Camp Quest is providing childcare, so bring the kids. High school and college students qualify for reduced registration fees. Go to conference.americanhumanist.org and register today.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
48 hours, 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero.
For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
After a deadly tornado destroyed her family's home, Rebecca Witzman teamed up with Foundation Beyond Belief to use her background in volunteer coordination to develop humanist disaster recovery teams. Seattle Atheists and Foundation Beyond Belief will welcome Rebecca at 7 p.m. on May 26th at Town Hall Seattle. Buy tickets for Rebecca Witzman After the Disaster at brownpapertickets.com or at the door. For more information, visit seattleatheists.org.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Matthew Bulger is a legislative associate with the American Humanist Association. He worked with Representative Mike Honda and his staff to introduce the National Day of Reason resolution to Congress. Welcome, Matthew.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
No problem. So what's the push behind National Day of Reason in the first place?
So the National Day of Reason was created to be an inclusive alternative to the National Day of Prayer, which occurs on the same day. As you may know, the National Day of Prayer was actually created in the 1950s by an act of Congress. And on the National Day of Prayer, the president issues a proclamation recognizing the celebration and asking Americans, usually of all faiths, to pray. And government officials at the federal, state, and local levels typically participate in prayer ceremonies as representatives of the government. So obviously we have a big problem with this. We think that since 20% of Americans identify as non-religious, the National Day of Prayer is pretty exclusionary, needly religious. We also view it as an unconstitutional violation of the separation between church and state. And so the National Day of Reason was created to be an inclusive holiday that both religious and non-religious Americans can enjoy.
You know, in looking at the National Day of Prayer, would it be something that the American Humanist Association would disfavor if government officials just didn't participate?
Yeah, we'd be okay with it if government officials didn't participate, and also if perhaps the original congressional action recognizing the National Day of Prayer was repudiated. We're very concerned. Obviously, this was created, this original act of Congress was created in the height of the McCarthyism era, so it's when government was reinjecting religion into pretty much every aspect of public life, whether it's the Pledge of Allegiance, this National Day of Prayer, and several other objectionable observances and policies that we're concerned about.
So you just said that it was started as an inclusive and secular alternative, but many see it as something that was started in response to National Day of Prayer. Could you please go over for just a minute why you believe that this should be viewed as something that everyone can get behind?
Definitely. So the National Day of Reason, rather, celebrates the application of reason and the positive impact it has had on humanity, whether it's developing new technologies or guiding good public policy. And this is something that everyone can celebrate, as all Americans, regardless of their religious background, whether they're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, or non-religious, use reason on a daily basis for all sorts of decisions in their lives, from the most tedious, daily tasks to decisions, you know, about their career and their future. And we think that that's something that, like I said, is more inclusive than a sectarian religious event such as the National Day of Prayer. And it's something that we see atheists celebrate, humanists celebrate, as well as progressive, secular religious Americans celebrate. So we think it's a lot more inclusive. We're also concerned, obviously, about the fact that a lot of the National Day of Prayer ceremonies tie religiosity with patriotism, leaving a lot of non-religious Americans to feel unpatriotic for not participating in these events. We don't want to force people into making that choice, which is why we think the National Day of Reason is a much better alternative.
Speaking of that, I noticed that the National Day of Prayer was introduced in 1952. In God We Trust on All of the Money was introduced, I believe, 4 years later.
Yeah.
Is there only relation
the fact that they both happened at the height of the McCarthy era, or was there something else involved? Or is there a link there?
Well, I would definitely argue that having government officials and government institutions endorsing religion in general, or specific religions in particular, probably has a pretty important impact on citizens across the country. So, you know, it may have created a religious environment in our society and in our government, which would allow for the creation of this religious language on our national currency. I think that those sorts of events and actions by a government can have a negative impact on the overall state of secularism in the country as a whole.
Yeah, I know a lot of us in the atheism community and humanists like to talk about reason and use the word reason in a lot of our stuff. But part of the reason I think talking about the word reason is that anybody can have it, and that, you know, from a exactly. humanist perspective, there's no problem with talking about reason, saying religious people can have reason as well. So I think the idea that it should be, you know, something anybody can show up at, and it's not sectarian, I think is incredibly important. But that brings us to today and House Resolution 228. So tell us about this resolution.
Well, it's in my opinion, it's a great resolution that we've actually based off of previous proclamations that we've gotten issued nationwide, either by governors, city councils, mayors. Actually, in 2014, in addition to all the mayors and city councils that issued proclamations, the governors of Rhode Island and Nebraska issued a proclamation which really served as the basis, as far as the language goes, for this new resolution that's been introduced at the federal level. And we think that this federal resolution will not only raise the visibility of the National Day of Reason, but that it will also show a lot of people that our concerns over the National Day of Prayer are valid. It's something that Congress is addressing. And if Congress is able, in the midst of all this crazy sectarian infighting, to address an issue as important as this, we think it's something that local citizens around the country should be able to do as well.
So you ended up working with Representative Honda and co-sponsor D.C. Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton. How did you end up Correct. Working with them? Did they seek you out? Did you target them?
So we've worked with those offices on a variety of different issues over the past few years, whether it's stuff like scientific research funding. We do a few D.C. budget autonomy items, which brings us into contact with Delegate Norton. But we also do a lot of work on LGBT rights, on which both representatives have been fantastic leaders. But Representative Honda in particular has done a lot on that issue. So we have an established connection with those offices. Representative Honda also, a few years back, was one of three people that voted against a resolution which was introduced in the U.S. House, which would reaffirm the national motto as In God We Trust.
Oh.
And he showed a lot of political bravery in voting against it. So we knew that he might be someone that was interested in working with us. In past years, Representative Honda and Norton have actually issued statements on the congressional record honoring the National Day of Reason. So we thought that this year we might want to step it up another level even and get a resolution introduced formally.
That political bravery part, that's really striking. Do you know if Representative Honda has gotten pushback or accusations of godlessness? I mean, I'm sure in some circles he has. But in a time when sort of the political climate says that anything related to secularism or atheism is sort of a career ender politically, do you know sort of how he deals with that, if you've been working with him closely?
So he actually represents Silicon Valley, which is a very politically progressive district. But I would actually push back on the idea that coming out as openly secular or even as openly non-religious, which Representative Honda is not, he is religious, is a bad thing politically. I think maybe in the 80s, even early 90s, that definitely held water. It was very concerning to not even just be an atheist, but to be secular. I think that in the modern day, though, that's no longer true. You have 35% of people under the age of 30 identifying as religiously unaffiliated. 23% of Americans identify as religiously unaffiliated. So I think it's something that perhaps in the past might have been concerning, but as people look at the demographics, the religious demographics of our country, politicians will start realizing that it's important not only that they speak up on issues of church-state separation, but that they work to embrace the humanist, atheist, non-religious community as a whole and work on behalf of their interests. And that's why I think a few politicians are doing that with the National Day of Reason and with other bills like the Darwin Day Resolution, which we were also able to get introduced this year.
I'm a little bit surprised to hear you say that being secular or, you know, non-sectarian, in fact, isn't a hindrance to a political career, because, I mean, here in the atheism community, we talk about it a lot. You know, I'm sure you've heard these conversations, too. I'm familiar with the increasing with the increasing irreligiosity of people, but that doesn't always translate into voting, into voting tendencies. And we're still seeing people saying they would never vote for an atheist, or they would vote for some sort of criminal before they would vote for an atheist. Mm-hmm. We're still seeing that as a theme when people talk to potential voters about voting. What are you seeing that I'm not? Because I would love some good news right now.
So I'm actually from a very conservative district in Texas originally. So I definitely understand where you're coming from on that. I think that in certain districts across the country, your assessment is correct, that it isn't beneficial and may be outwardly harmful to come out as an open atheist. My broader point is that across America, that is becoming less and less the case. In certain places on the coast or even in the heartland, it's acceptable to not be overly religious and even to be secular or non-religious. That's something that's going to continue to change as the demographics I spoke about mature to voting age and participate more in the political process. But I would really push back on the assertion that it is politically unpopular or unfeasible to come out as a non-religious American. I think that within the next few years, you'll start seeing more and more atheist politicians. You have to remember also that there's already been an atheist politician in the United States Congress, Representative Pete Stark, who is fantastic. Kristen Sinema lists herself as secular or none. The terms are a little bit confused there, but she is definitely not religious as well. And there's a good number of people who are in Congress who list the religious affiliation as unaffiliated or non-denominational, buzzwords essentially to hide the fact that they are not religious. And I think that in the next few years, those very people will be comfortable in coming out fully with their religious views.
In past years, Honda and Holmes Norton have both been on the record as being just simply supportive of Day of Reason. Why do you think this is the year that you have moved for a full-on resolution?
Well, I think it was just a really good time. Like I said before, I've noticed, and this is purely anecdotal, I've noticed in my lobbying in Congress a much warmer attitude towards my organization in particular and towards the movement as a whole. And part of this is because my organization is holding congressional briefings on the Hill that familiarize policymakers with our movement, what we want, who we are as people. But I think a broader part of that is the fact that the non-religious movement as a whole is becoming part of the mainstream in American society. You're seeing reasonable portrayals of atheists on TV shows like The Good Wife. You're seeing also at the same time religious institutions being portrayed by a lot of the media as bastions of discrimination. So I think that the benefit that politicians saw in the past for associating with religious beliefs, regardless of what beliefs they are, is not so much a benefit anymore, and the negative of being an atheist is certainly dissipating as well. And also part of that is due to the fact that my organization and several other groups are trying to actively get atheist politicians elected, and humanist politicians elected. We recently started up a PAC, the Freethought Equality Fund, with that exact mission. Now, admittedly, we also do endorse and support candidates for office who are religious but support the separation of church and state. But at the same time, we're really looking for reasonable, pragmatic politicians who are atheist, humanist, free thinker, and who have a chance of winning public office. And we're looking to support those people.
All right. Another sidebar conversation, if you will. And I agree. I don't think there's anything incompatible with trying to get atheist and humanist politicians elected and religious politicians who support the separation of church and state. I think you need both. You're giving briefings in Congress.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Definitely. So last year, we gave our first ever congressional briefing on humanist chaplains in the military. We just held it in the House. This year, we're holding a congressional briefing on international religious freedom issues for non-believers as well as for religious minorities, and that's going to be held in the House and the Senate. But even the briefing that we had last year was amazing. I had a room for about 50 to 70 people. The room ended up being completely filled. We had to kick people out. Only congressional staffers. We didn't have random activists coming in. It was really jammed to the walls, which was fantastic to see. And in order to get those congressional briefings, we need to get the sponsorship of a member of Congress for that specific room. So we're having not only great support from congressional staffers themselves, but also from members of Congress who want to ensure that we're able to talk about the issues that matter to us in the halls of Congress itself.
really some interesting stuff going on in D.C. and between Free Thought Equality PAC, American Humanist Association. Were you involved at all in the recent Secular Lobby Day?
I was. I went with a few constituents. I actually was handling meetings with representatives and senators from Iowa as well as from Missouri. And actually, the Lobby Day was a fantastic event in general, not only because it got humanist constituents to meet with their members of Congress, but because we had great guest speakers who came and talked about some of the important things that our movement is doing in the halls of Congress. So one of the speakers that we had actually was Representative Honda himself, who talked at that event about the importance of the National Day of Reason, the importance of supporting the separation between church and state. And he really just showed a lot of different people that there are allies in Congress that are religious, but that may see eye to eye with us on a lot of different issues. And that's important to my organization, to work with people who may feel differently than us on religious matters, but who agree with us on political items of the day.
So you work in D.C. now, but you grew up in a non-Christian household in Texas. What's the likelihood of a Day of Reason being supported outside of places like D.C. and, you know, places like liberal California?
Definitely. I think it's going to grow in the future as programs like Openly Secular grow in prominence. I think that a great thing that the LGBT equality movement has done is to try and encourage members of that community to come out to their family members and to their friends in a respectful way. And I think that as you start seeing the breadth of our movement, not just on the coast, but in the middle of the country as well, you will start to see more and more political support for the things that we're pushing. Right now, it's probably a little bit difficult to get people from my hometown in Texas to come out as official supporters of the National Day of Reason. But it's not something that I see as impossible over the next few years. And I think that this resolution actually will go a long way to encouraging public support for the holiday, or for the observance, rather, and that perhaps even in a few years you'll start seeing more support in that specific aspect. And it's important to note, too, that proclamations supporting the National Day of Reason have been issued in some pretty conservative places, including in Nebraska. We're definitely not a coast-only organization. We're definitely working to make sure that humanists are comfortable with being who they are, not just in California, but in places in South Carolina, in Georgia, in Mississippi, Texas even. So I think that it's something we'll see more of in the years to come.
So should this pass, what do you expect the impact that a Day of Reason proclamation would have on the federal government?
So the National Day of Reason resolution, if it was passed in Congress, I think it would actually be pretty influential. It would show not just their constituents, but I think even foreign countries, that America is moving out of some of its religious fervor that might have defined our politics in the 80s and early 90s as the religious right rose to prominence. Hopefully, it would eventually lead to ending of congressional support of the National Day of Prayer, but that's like speculation, and I couldn't necessarily promise that.
Sounds like a stretch goal.
Yeah.
So what can listeners do if they want to see a National Day of Reason in their state, local, or national, even on the national level?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that. You can either go to our website at AmericanHumanist.org or to our specific National Day of Reason website at NationalDayOfReason.org. There's a link on there to an action alert, which will allow humanists of non-believers to contact their member of Congress and ask them to co-sponsor this resolution. And that will go a long way towards getting it passed.
Matthew Bolger is a legislative associate with the American Humanist Association. He worked with Representative Mike Honda and his staff to introduce the National Day of Reason resolution to Congress. Thank you very much for your time and for the good news, in fact, if I can make a joke.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to head into a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Australia for a bit.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Join Seattle Atheists at the Hall at Fauntleroy on June 4th for an evening with Seth Andrews, host and producer of the award-winning Thinking Atheist podcast. A former Christian and religious broadcaster, Seth's everyman approach brings millions into the conversation about religious beliefs. Doors for this event open at 6 p.m. for a cash bar reception, followed by a talk at 7:15. Seth will stick around afterwards for a signing of his new book, Sacred Cows. Tickets can be purchased at the door and at brownpapertickets.com. Brought to you by Seattle Atheists. We believe in you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Toll-free nationwide, that is our voicemail number. And, well, let's see, we started talking about school, then cancer, to reason, to Australia, in fact.
Okay. What's coming out of Australia, Sam?
All right. An Australian health blogger admitted to lying about having cancer. Belle Gibson built a successful blog and business after claiming she had cured a malignant brain tumor with natural foods and alternative therapies. In a recent interview, Gibson admitted that none of it was true and says she doesn't want forgiveness. The cookbook Gibson wrote was withdrawn by its publisher, and the app she created has been pulled by the Apple Store.
This is quite the sort of interesting story, because Belle Gibson is sort of the Australian analog to the U.S.'s food babe.
Yeah.
And amongst the skeptic community,
who is roughly like 30% of my Facebook page these days, people yelling about her.
Right. The skeptic community really takes the food babe to task and saying, look, the claims that you make are completely ungrounded, unfounded. You're creating this chemophobia, meaning like fear of chemicals. Hint, right? Everything is chemicals.
Yeah.
Right? Chemicals just means it's bunches of atoms. And things are made of atoms, and when you get multiple atoms, and they link together, they create chemicals, right? So this Belle Gibson is sort of the Australian analog to it. But her claims are even more ridiculous, because instead of just saying these things are good for your body and these things are bad for your body, she actually said, hey, I cured my own cancer with basically eating raw foods and beans and nuts and green leafy vegetables.
That's true. Food babe and a lot of these people, you know, they tend to talk in very vague terms. Well, they don't talk vague terms when they're talking about how terrible everything you eat is, because they make their money by making you buy other stuff. But when they talk about the health benefits of the food, they talk about toxins and wellness.
And I have energy
flow and chi and a bunch of really vague or just completely nonsense terms. I have cancer. I cured it by eating kale chips.
There's a big difference there. And turns out she did no such thing.
Yeah.
Because there was no such brain tumor.
Well, and it's also more dangerous because people might look at her and say, well, I have cancer, I'm not going to get treatment because this worked for her. And that's a very, very dangerous thing to do to somebody who has cancer for real.
And malignant brain tumor, that's not a fun one.
No. Malignant,
not that
means
there's fun cancer out there.
Yes. No, malignant means deadly. And
I think some scientists are working on that. But
yes. Fun brain tumor?
I don't know.
Implant me some fun, please. No. The thing, though, is she said, okay, I was lying. I didn't actually have brain cancer. And I'm trying to sort of see into this woman a little bit and speculate into this woman, saying, did she just kind of have things tumble and spiral out of control? Was she looking at it for the attention? And the subsequent interviews did suggest, or seem to suggest, that she doesn't have cancer, but she does have what she deems to be a legitimate disorder, but an emotional and psychological disorder.
Well, right. They, factitious disease, also known as Munchausen.
Sort of. Munchausen.
Yeah, standard Munchausen, not Munchausen by proxy, which people
right,
are familiar with.
Right. And, well, the thing about Munchausen is if you have Munchausen by proxy and you end up doing something devastating to your child, you're still criminally liable because you have...
You've injured a child.
You've injured a child. What she did with her Munchausen was very dangerous. And just because she has Munchausen, even if that, you know, even if she's proven to have that, it doesn't take away the devastating effects of what she's done to people, not just if they have cancer, but promoting these ideas not supported by evidence, and people go forward using this. And some people might not even know that she faked cancer at this point because it's already in their mind that they have these reasons and they don't go back and check this kind of stuff.
We do know that despite Andrew Wakefield's article in The Lancet suggesting that there was any kind of danger of vaccines, apart from that article being rescinded and basically a plethora of data saying there is no link between vaccines and autism, that link still persists in the minds of people. And, you know, that's when we get things like, oh, well, you don't need vaccines because you can eat kale chips, as you said,
right.
Which is a completely unsupported, unsubstantiated, and dangerous claim. You know, I mean, her books are presumably still out there at secondhand bookstores. She may still be profiting from this. And that's something that would be really disturbing. If she, you know, says, all right, I lied. These things don't work. I didn't cure cancer. Could she use those profits and that money to do something like promote actual healthcare?
Well, and another thing is these books still exist on the shelves of the people who bought them and perhaps read them and believed in them. And they have no reason not to unless somehow this information gets to them.
I really would like to know like the chain of thoughts that lead to I'm going to fake cancer. I mean, I'm not the most truthful guy in the world. In fact, 30% of everything I say is false. Check me on that. But I just to say to lie about standard stuff, to white lies and all that stuff, I get that. But then to go from I want to push these things, I'm going to pretend I had cancer, even for commercial benefit, this is a realm that I don't quite understand.
And I think if it's true that she has Munchausen, it would be a realm that you aren't capable of understanding because it's a place where your brain doesn't go.
Well, you can understand the mechanism without empathizing or like feeling the mechanism. I mean, I would like to understand it from an intellectual standpoint because I don't have Munchausen's, right? And I think that's possible, but I just there's something there, and I'd like to know more about it because I think that would tell us something a lot about people, not just people with Munchausen.
And does she have it?
Right.
The other reasons.
If she's faked cancer, is she also trying to?
I know. She's just like, well, feel pity on me because I have this disorder, and that's why I did something so egregiously wrong.
Yeah. I mean, Munchausen's or not, you fake cancer. Clearly, I think you need some sort of help, some sort of support. But you, like you said, you still are responsible, and that's the point. Sticking with Australia, however, some good news. The Australian government voted to end religious exemptions for parents who refuse to vaccinate their kids. Parents who refuse to vaccinate will no longer be able to receive a number of monetary benefits from the government, including a childcare benefit worth up to $10,000 a year and a childcare tax rebate worth up to $7,500 a year. Exemptions for medical reasons will still be in place.
This is something that, in light of the Bell Gibson saying, you know what, no, it was all wrong, you know, you can't prevent measles with kale chips.
And this is the moment where I realize Bell Gibson sounds like Mel Gibson. Sorry, go on.
Well, they're Australian.
What are you talking about?
No,
whatever.
So
Gibson's not here.
But this is actually a really, really uplifting note. We say, all right, we have the sort of the downfall of this ridiculous thinking, and we have the support of the government to say we need to protect our people, or protect our populations, protect our children. And if you take it upon yourself to refuse to have vaccinations, we aren't going to support you in that way. Now, I'm assuming that the Australian government, if a child did end up having measles, would presumably support the medical care of that child.
Yes, and there are things that they said about they're not going to let a child who is impoverished not have support. That's in place as well. You know, I'm funny on this one. I'm like what they're doing, but sometimes in my mind, it seems like the first step might be, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's not the first step, but I would like to see this happen. But to make it criminal because it's endangering other human beings or something like that before saying, we're just not going to give you money, but saying maybe there's a fine for endangering the population by doing this absolutely horrible, dangerous thing within the population. I don't know. I feel like that is something I would not like to see, but just to have pondered
to consider. Because, I mean, child care is something that you spend some time talking about.
I do. I do have that, like, worry about the children.
Yeah.
This kind of is taking money away. And if the parent is stubborn and is like, well, I can survive without it. Like, what do they go without while they're trying to survive without it? Because they have these weird, completely ridiculous ideological beliefs. Like, will that affect them?
Well, you're going to lose a lot of true believers in the anti-vax movement this way. I mean, you've got your core of true believers.
That.
Wait, this is costing me
and
17 grand?
Never mind. If they reach out and say, oh, but I have this evidence from Bell Gibson, you can say, hey, oh, by the way, that's incorrect.
Yeah.
You know, it's an opportunity, at the very least.
Well, and one thing that this might do is actually keep unvaccinated children out of state subsidized child care centers. If you're getting a child care tax subsidy or you know, gift from the government to send your child to daycare, then presumably your child will be out of daycare. You know, we saw earlier this year in Chicago, there were several daycare centers that had to be closed because some of the unvaccinated children had brought measles there. Mm-hmm. And the thing about daycare centers, when you're doing infant through age 6 or infant through age 5, those infants can't have received those kinds of vaccinations. They're still unprotected because they have not developed the immune system to have those antibodies. They don't have their immunity yet. And so if keeping these children out of daycare centers via a monetary withholding can do that and protect as many kids who are at daycare centers or who, as you said, Sam, for medical reasons, those medical exemptions would still be in place.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There are children who cannot receive vaccinations because of allergies or because of being immunocompromised.
Anders couldn't receive one back whenever he was young because it had an egg base and he was allergic to egg until he was about 1.5. And so he was not able to receive some of these vaccines until he was older. And now he's received them and everything's fine. But yeah, there was a terrifying moment where I'm like, I have to figure out whether or not the people I'm associating with are crazy or not. And, you know, like, yeah, it was hard.
Criminal consequences, though, I'd like to bring it back to that. That's not something I often hear from people who talk about the anti-vax movement. Criminal consequences for not vaccinating your kids. I think the case can be made.
I think that it should be eventually made. I don't know if we're there yet, but it just seems criminal. I'm sorry. In my mind, to endanger an entire population for something that has absolutely no support, that just seems like I can just walk around wielding knives and swatting them around randomly, and I hope nobody ever gets hit by my knife. You know, I don't know. It's just weird.
And this is something that I can't say. I mean, the creationists, the young earth creationists, they bother me. Debating them is fun. They're trying to make people dumb. But when your social movement, when your anti-science movement has a death toll attached to it, mm-hmm. that's when my anger comes in. Like, I'm able to be a little bit... You know, I'll get debate angry. You know, I'll get in debate rut. That's one thing. But now that your dumb movement's killing kids, killing immunocompromised people, I'm done thinking this is fun. This is not something I want to debate.
And it's always the weakest of the population.
Right. It's
the people who
are most vulnerable.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
One thing that's interesting here is that Australia is doing away with the religious exemption. But someone who's following Bell Gibson, who's following a natural sort of promoter, where does that fall in state to state, from country to country? Because we know that there's a religious exemption because you believe that God will provide all your care. And then there may be people taking exemptions, like in Washington State, when we have places like Mercer Island that have high rates of unvaccinated children in our school system, or some of the San Juan Islands that have, high populations of unvaccinated children in our school systems, that's not for a religious reason that you believe that God will provide everything. It's a sort of spiritual, personal conviction.
I think I read somewhere that they mention that specific thing, that conscientious objection is what I think they called it.
Right.
And they lump that in.
Well, you also have Dianetics kata here. I mean, you can do what L. Ron Hubbard did, which was Dianetics, when it came out in 1960 or whatever, it was self-help. It was psychology for the masses. It was psychotherapy that people could do to each other. But then he screwed up on his taxes, or he really wanted to rub vigorously up against money and didn't pay his taxes and then got in trouble.
So he declared himself a religion.
So it turned it into a religion. That's when you're talking about energy flows and toxicity and bringing in some you know, pseudoscientific concepts. That's really easy to transform into a religion.
It's probably the safest place to put it in religion, since religion deals with things, with questions that are untestable.
Right.
And if you have these beliefs that are untestable, I mean, well, they are for that matter, but you know, you can't say.
And this is why religious exemptions stink, because anything can be a religion at this point. If you have religious freedom, which I think is good.
Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Right. You can turn any ridiculous, dangerous claim into a religion. So sometimes religious exemptions can't rule over everything. Indiana.
We're also seeing actually some action in California, where they're looking at the state level, ending some of those personal conviction exemptions from vaccines for children in the school system. We're also seeing in Washington state a push to actually enforce our laws to track whether our children that are in our public schools are vaccinated or not. Right now, there's not really any penalty or enforcement. You know, we say by October 1st, we have to register our numbers of students that are in our school and attending. And if there's a push to register all our kids by October 1st and report that number to the state in order to account for the funding, then there is no push to keep a child home at all in September if they're unvaccinated. And so we're starting to see in states more attention being drawn to that, with increase in things like measles or whooping cough, which are immensely dangerous to young people, young children, and to immunocompromised and the elderly.
All right. I think you've pretty much put that away.
It's something I feel strongly about. I work in a system that serves young people, and it serves young people broadly. And if I can't guarantee their safety in the best way possible, it bothers me.
But let's do some emails since we're coming to the top of the hour. This one comes to us from Micah from Lubbock, Texas, who writes, "Hey, Sam, I've been listening to your show for a long time now, and due to the huge amount of evidence, I can only assume that you are me, or at least in a few years, I will be you. To begin, I am a humanist atheist skeptic. I am also a ham. I am the regional coordinator for Paizo, the makers of Pathfinder, and I love to be vocal about my atheism. The similarities don't end there, but those were ones most readily available to my mind while writing this. Anyways, love the show."
Oh, Sam, you are a clone?
I might be. I mean, if I were to clone myself, I'd probably put the clone somewhere where I would be very unlikely to go. Like,
and now we're going to switch your name. Your name is now Micah. Micah, you are now Sam.
Didn't we? Yeah.
Clone one, clone two.
They're quoting me in the University of Florida.
Okay. the place where you would be least likely to go might be Lubbock, Texas.
Yeah, and you know, the overlap of, speaking of hams, it would be ham radio, not made out of ham. But I mean, I eat enough of it, and you are what you eat, so there you go. Not a lot of overlap with atheists and hams, but there's some. Two in the room. And yeah, okay, that is a very specific number of things that we have in common. And I'm also older. Thanks for that.
Well, Sam, are you one in a million? So that means there's how many of you walking around on Earth? There's at least one walking around in Lubbock, Texas.
Yeah, that was one of the horrible things I said to you once, where we were having a conversation about people. Becky, you're one in a million, which means there's 100,000 of you in China.
and this is actually before the much lauded Tim Minchin, comedian, songwriter, beloved by atheists and humanists, had written a song about being one in a million, right?
Oh, we did?
Yes, because statistics be damned. You're cool, you're special, you're awesome, but hey, you know what? There's a lot of people like you.
I got that. I don't know. Just numbers are fun.
But think of it. Without radio, you never would have known that there's one of you walking around in Lubbock.
We also have a...
He found you.
Yeah. So we also have a pile of emails from somebody named...
Match made in heaven.
Heinlein in Germany, which I think we're going to have to... we've got enough emails that I think we're going to need to do a show of wacky emails at some point. But unfortunately, That's all the time we've got for today. This is Ask an Atheist. You can give us a phone call at 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. You can email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. Our Twitter is askanatheistwa. I'd like to thank Dave Roulette. I'd like to thank Becca. I'd like to thank Becky. And that was a fun episode.
It was. Let's thank Matthew Bulger from the
American Matthew Humanist Bulger. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
I was saying things so that I could remember the name. So anyway, see you guys next week.